You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio. This is your host, Damian Perdue, your guide on this metaphysical ride through thoughts outside the mainstream realm of ideas and topics. Got to flip it up every week, you know. Don't want to say the same thing all the time. And I'm here with Devin.
Hello, Damian. I need to put my mic in my face so people can hear me.
Yeah. It's D&D today.
The Double D Show.
Yeah. Play a little Dungeons & Dragons. Get you ready? It kind of fits my show, Dungeons & Dragons.
I played it once, so I think so.
Be the Dungeon Master. You are kind of the Dungeon Master because you're like controlling.
Yeah, I got the board that controls everything you
you're
do right now.
Controlling the universe.
The board master.
Speaking of controlling the universe, today we're going to do another. It's been about a month, so you know, every one, I figure like once a month or so, I got to do my weird science and tales to astonish. My voice is cracking a little bit, so I can't really do the echoes that great, but I have some pretty good articles. We have stuff about the universe running backwards and cosmic cracks in the universe, robotic lenses for your eyeballs. What else we got? I got a, this one's pretty good. And this kind of good timing for it because of, you know, all the Star Wars stuff out. But scientists may have found a fifth force of nature. So maybe the, you know, the fifth force be with you. And so let's get, I want to get freaky with it right off the bat and do this mirror universe where time runs backwards. And this is from PBS Nova. It says, Big Bang may have created a mirror universe where time runs backwards. And two leading theories propose to explain the direction of time by way of the relatively uniform conditions of the Big Bang. At the very first start, what is now the universe was homogeneously hot, so much so that matter didn't really exist. It was all just a superheated soup, that good old primordial soup. Also, band name. But as the universe expanded and cooled, stars, galaxies, planets, and other celestial bodies formed, birthing the universe's irregular structure and raising its entropy. One theory proposed in 2004 by Sean Carroll, now a professor at Caltech, and Jennifer Chen, then his graduate student, says that time moves forward because of the contrast in entropy between then and now, with an emphasis on the fact that the future universe will so much more distorted than in the past. That movement toward high entropy gives time its direction. The new theory says a low-entropy early universe is inevitable because of gravity, and ultimately that's what gives time its arrow. To test the idea, the theory's proponents assembled a simple model with nothing more than 1,000 particles and the physics of Newtonian gravity. And according to Lee Billings, reporting for Scientific American, the system's complexity is at its lowest when all the particles come together in a densely packed cloud, a state of minimum size and maximum uniformity, roughly analogous to the Big Bang. The team's analysis showed that essentially every configuration of particles, regardless of their number and scale, would evolve into this low-complexity state. Thus, the sheer force of gravity set the stage for the system's expansion and the origin of time's arrow, all without any delicate fine-tuning to first establish a low-entropy initial condition. But here's the twist, says M. Night Shyamalan. The expansion after the simulated Big Bang didn't just happen in one direction, but two. The simple Big Bang they modeled produced two universes, one a mirror of the other. In one universe, time appears to run forwards. I'm presuming that's ours. In the other, time runs backwards, at least from our perspective. Again, Billings says, If they were complicated enough, both sides would sustain observers who would perceive time going in opposite directions. Any intelligent beings there would be define their arrow of time as moving away from this central state. They would think, we now live in their deepest past. From that perspective, From that perspective, maybe George Lucas's Star Wars didn't take place a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but in the far future, our deepest past of our mirror universe. Hip-a-dum-bum. And it's weird because I just mentioned Star Wars. So it's all coming together, people. It's how the universe does, man. The universe works in mysterious ways. But this is a concept I've read about before, and it's pretty interesting that there could be this universe where time runs backwards. Although I don't really fully comprehend if they perceive it as moving forward. It's just backwards to us. And maybe, you know, it's kind of like looking in a mirror. You see something, it looks backwards. But if somebody was actually living in a mirror, they would look at you and think you were backwards. You know, like a mirror soul or something. There's actually a good graphic novel written by Daniel Quinn, who wrote the Ishmael series. If you've never read them, those are pretty good books. Ishmael, Ishmael 2, The Story of B. But he wrote this graphic novel called The Man Who Grew Young. And it's all about this guy who grew up in this, or grew down, I guess, in this backwards universe. And spoiler alert, because I'm about to give it all away. It's basically this guy, so everything in that universe goes backwards, and you come out of the grave as your kind of birth, and you know, kind of Benjamin Button-ness, grow downwards or younger all the way into your birth, and you actually don't meet your mom until she dies. So that's like when you meet and then you go back into her womb. But this man, the main character, never grows young. And everyone around him keeps growing younger and younger. And he's going through time periods, like from, you know, modern day to the Middle Ages to ancient Egypt, onward and downward and backward in time. And eventually he gets to the point where, you know, I'm not going to give it all away, but he gets to the point where there isn't much left on Earth. And it's all this kind of, you know, spiritual symbolism and everything about the origins of time and universe and humanity. And but it's pretty good. And it's a little graphic novel. It's pretty easy to read. Cool illustrations and stuff. So that goes along with the whole mirror universe thing. And to continue on in our universe cosmic discussion, there might be cracks in the universe, but we can't see them from Earth. And this is from space.com. It says, if the cracks, if they exist, are old remnants of a time shortly after the Big Bang. And this is when the universe had just shifted from a hotter, more alien state to the cooler, more familiar one we see today. That great cool down, what physicists call a phase transition, started earlier in some places than others, as the theory goes. Bubbles of cooler universe formed and spread, blooming across space until they met other bubbles. Eventually, all of space transitioned and the old universe disappeared. But that old high-energy state may have lived on the borders between the bubbles, cracks in the fabric of space-time, where those cooling regions met and didn't perfectly fit together. Some physicists thought we might still see evidence of those cracks or defects, known as cosmic strings. Not to be confused with superstring theory, if people out there know about string theory, it's a little different. In the cosmic microwave background, the heat left over from the universe's violent emergence. But according to a new paper, that evidence would simply be too faint for any telescope to ever pick up out against the noise. Cosmic strings are difficult objects to imagine, says Oscar Hernandez, a physicist at McGill University in Montreal and co-author of the paper. But they have analogs in our world. Have you ever walked on a frozen lake? Have you noticed cracks laced through the frozen lake, he says. It's still quite solid. There's nothing to be afraid of, but there's cracks. Those cracks form through a similar phase transition process as cosmic strings. Ice is water that has gone through a phase transition. Molecules of water were free to move as fluid, and then all of a sudden, somewhere, they start to form into a crystal. It starts to tile itself in tiles, which are often hexagons. Now imagine having tiles that are perfect hexagons and tiling the lake with that. If somebody at the other end of the lake starts to tile again, there's essentially zero chance that your tiles will line up. Imperfect meeting places on frozen lake surface form long cracks. In the fabric where space and time intersect, they form cosmic strings, if the underlying physics is correct. In space, researchers believe, there are fields that determine the behavior of fundamental forces and particles. The first phase transitions of the universe brought these fields into being. There could be a field relating to some particle that has to, in some sense, pick a direction to freeze and cool it. And since the universe is really big, it could pick different directions in different parts of the universe, he said. Now, if this field obeys certain conditions, then when the universe has cooled down, there will be lines of discontinuity. Am I saying that right? Discontinuity, I think, right. I got it. There will be lines of energy that cannot cool down. Today, those meeting points would appear as here's another word. Where's my grammar teacher at?
Sound it out.
Infinitesimally. Lines, thin lines of energy through space. Finding those cosmic strings would be a big deal because they would be another piece of evidence that physics is bigger and more complicated than the current model allows. Right now, the most advanced theory of particle physics that researchers feel has been conclusively proven is known as the Standard Model. It includes the quarks and electrons that make up atoms, as well as more exotic particles like the Higgs boson and neutrinos. However, most physicists believe the Standard Model is incomplete. As Live Science has reported previously, there are all sorts of ideas on how to expand on it, from the supersymmetric particles to superstring theory, as I said earlier, that is different from these cosmic strings. Many extensions of the Standard Model that people really like a lot of superstring theories and others, naturally lead to cosmic strings after the post-Big Bang inflation takes place, Hernandez said. So what we have is an object that is predicted by very many models. So if they don't exist, then all these models are ruled out. If they do exist, oh my God, people are happy. Now, assuming a perfect noise-free map of the cosmic microwave background, they wrote in a separate paper in 2017, a computer running that sort of neural network should be able to find cosmic strings even if their energy levels are remarkably low. But revisiting the subject in this new 2019 paper, they showed that in reality, it's almost certainly impossible to provide clean enough CMB data for the neural network to detect these potential strings. Other brighter microwave sources obscure the CMB and are difficult to fully disentangle. That doesn't mean all is lost, though. A new method for hunting cosmic strings is based on measurements of the expansion of the universe in all directions across ancient parts of the universe. This method, called 21-centimeter intensity mapping, doesn't rely on studying the movements of individual galaxies or on precise images of the CMB, Hernandez said. Instead, it's based on measurements of the speed at which hydrogen atoms are moving away from Earth, on average, in all parts of deep space. There might be cracks in space-time, but humanity's telescopes can't see them. Dun, 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 dun. So all that means is, we don't know if that's real or not. It's a good theory, you know. Sounds cool. Cracks in the universe. I feel like that could be like a sci-fi movie. Cracks in the universe. And speaking of which, I just started watching a new sci-fi show. Relatively new. Called The Night Flyers. Now, are you into sci-fi at all, Devin?
Many years ago, I used to watch Sci-Fi Channel, at least, like, you know, every now and then. I watched, remember that show Primeval about the dinosaurs in, like, modern times? That was a show I grew up watching.
Okay.
So that's my sci-fi Doctor Who and stuff like that. None too spectacular.
And that would be, like, the parallel to me growing up with Land of the Lost.
That just was much better graphics.
Night Flyer is pretty good if people like sci-fi stuff. It's came out last year. I think they're on their second season, but I just started watching it on the good old Netflix. But it's about humanity's first contact. They see kind of a spaceship like outside of our solar system, And we're at a point in time where we're trying to colonize the rest of the solar system. So we have this huge spaceship in our solar system called the Night Flyer. And the guy who runs it decides to help these scientists go and try to contact these aliens. So kind of in the beginning stages of it where they're trying to get there. But there's more to it than that. There's like this crazy psychic guy who's kind of like a mass murderer, but they need his help. So they have him like locked up and they utilize him because they think these aliens might be telepathic and everything. So yeah, you know, sci-fi stuff. Check it out. And back to the weird science stuff. I got some cool stuff coming up after the break. Is there a geometric particle that underlies all of physics? And then, like I said earlier, robotic lenses for your eyeballs, something, you know, we all could use. And China is planning on building an artificial moon to help take away from the streetlights or to illuminate areas of China that don't have streetlights. They're going to put this artificial moon into low orbit. So, you know, for all my fake moon fans out there, this goes along with that. But we'll get to those articles and more. And if you want to give us a call, hit us up at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. You can also text us to that line. Thanks to GWC. And we'll be back in a couple minutes with more Think Theory Radio right here on WCPT 820.
You're listening to WCPT 820, because facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and we're doing weird science and tales to astonish. And we got some pretty cool stories. If you're just tuning in, I just got through talking about a possible mirror universe that was created during the Big Bang and where time runs backwards, and the old cosmic cracks in the universe. Strings like cracks in the ice, you know? Because that's the universe, like just a big lake, frozen lake of particles. But now let's get into some like technological stuff. And this one is pretty wild to me. Fake moon. Could China really light up the night sky? And this is from BBC.com. A Chinese company has announced ambitious plans to put a fake moon into space to brighten the night sky. According to the People's Daily State newspaper, officials at a private aerospace institute in Chengdu want to launch this illumination satellite in orbit by 2020, next year, and say it will be bright enough to replace streetlights. The straight-out-of-sci-fi news has sparked fascination, skepticism from scientists, lots of questions, and outright mockery. So what do we know about this project? Not much. Of course, you know, China, they don't like to tell you much, so. And the little information that is available is somewhat contradictory. People's Daily first reported it last week, quoting comments made at an innovation conference by Wu Chunfeng, chairman of the neatly named Chengdu Aerospace Science Institute Microelectronic System Research Institute Company Limited. Oh, that's not long at all.
Try saying that 10 times fast.
Right. Mr. Wu said the idea has been testing for a few years and the technology was now in place to make it happen with a launch scheduled for 2020. The China Daily newspaper quoted Mr. Wu as saying that three huge mirrors could be launched by 2022. It's not clear from any of the reports whether this project has any official backing. So how might a fake moon work? The artificial moon would work as a mirror, reflecting sunlight back to Earth, according to the China Daily. It would orbit 500 kilometers about Earth, roughly the same height as the International Space Station. The moon orbits on average about 380,000 kilometers above Earth. The reports gave no details about what the fake moon would look like, but Mr. Wu said it would reflect sunlight across an area of between 10 kilometers and 80 kilometers with brightness 8 times that of the real moon. According to Mr. Wu, both the accuracy, intensity, and intensity of the light would be controllable. But why do it? To save money. It might sound ridiculous, but the Chengdu aerospace officials say putting a fake moon in space could actually end up being cheaper than paying for streetlights. China Daily quoted Mr. Wu as saying illuminating an area of 50 square kilometers could save up to 1.10 billion yuan. That's 173 million a year in electricity charges. So that's a lot of money. It could also illuminate blackout areas after, say, a natural disaster like an earthquake. Think of it as sort of an investment, Dr. Matteo Serioti, a lecturer in space systems engineering at the University of Glasgow, told BBC. Electricity at night is very expensive, so if you could, say, have free illumination for up to 15 years, it might work out better economically in the long term. Well, is it possible? Scientifically, it's viable, says Dr. Serioti. But to serve its purpose, the fake moon would have to be permanently in orbit over Chengdu, a relatively tiny area when you look at the Earth from space. That would mean it would need to be in geostationary orbit, which is about 37,000 kilometers from the Earth. The only problem is that that distance, you need the satellite pointing direction to be extremely accurate. If you want to light up an area with an error of, say, 10 kilometers, even if you miss by 1/100th of a degree, you'll have the light pointing at another place, Serioti said. And to have any impact from that distance, the mirror would have to be truly colossal. So what impact would it have on the environment? Kang Wyman, director at the Harbin Institute of Technology, told the People's Daily that the light of the satellite would be similar to a dusk-like glow and should not affect animals' routines. But social media users in China have concerns. You know, gotta listen to those social media users. Some said it would surely confuse nocturnal animals, while others say that many cities in China already suffer from light pollution. The moon would significantly increase the nighttime brightness of an already light-polluted city, creating problems for Chengdu's residents who are unable to screen out the unwanted light. John Barentine, director of public policy at the International Dark Sky Association, told news outlet Forbes. Dr. Serioti told the BBC that if the light is too strong, it will disrupt the night cycle of nature and this could possibly affect animals. But conversely, if the light is so faint, then the question is, what's the point of it? Now, is this a first? No. A space mirror to create daylight at night has actually been tried before. In 1993, Russian scientists released a 20-meter-wide reflector from a supply ship heading to the Mir space station, which was orbiting between 200 kilometers and 420 kilometers. Zenomaya 2 briefly beamed a spot of light about 5 kilometers in diameter to Earth. The light marched across Europe at 8 kilometers an hour before the satellite burned up on reentry. Attempts to build a bigger model of Zenomaya failed in the late 90s. Leading that the BBC's science editor at the time to say that there was not the slightest chance that the Earth will be girdled with space mirrors in the foreseeable future. So, I don't know, but that was 20 years ago, so the technology might be crazily improved and there could be all kind of mirrors floating in the sky. And actually, I was reading this, it reminded me of another story that I didn't plan to talk about, but this is, it's kind of similar. This was happened a couple, like a year or two ago. And it was an artwork that was put in space. And now I'm reading from CBSnews.com, but it was a sculpture that unravels in space could become most widely viewed artwork of all time. And that November, that was in 2018, a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket will deliver 70 satellites in Earth's orbit, including one that comes from the Nevada Museum of Art. It's called Orbital Reflector, and it's the latest work by artist Trevor Paglen. The point of working on Orbital Reflector was to try and imagine a different kind of infrastructure. Could we imagine making a satellite that's the exact opposite of every other? Paglen said. A satellite balloon will unravel and expand once in space, going from a package the size of a shoebox to a diamond sculpture the size of 2 school buses. For me, it was important to create a kind of catalyst for people to go out and to look at the sky and think about the politics of space and public space. Paglen said. After working on a previous project, Paglen began to see a disturbing trend. I was noticing that there was a kind of military occupation of space that had been in place for a long time. I started to think about how space might be different. Paglen and the Nevada Museum of Art assembled a team that brought experts in from unconventional fields. Viewable to the naked eye, orbital reflector will circle the planet several times before dropping back into the Earth's atmosphere and burning away. But for its 3 months in space, it may just become the most widely viewed artwork of all time. We look at the sky and try to figure out what our destiny might be, or what our past might be, or what the present might be. For me, the project is really just an opportunity to ask those big questions, Paglen said. So that thing, I remember when it happened, and it was caused a lot of controversy for similar reasons, because people were afraid that it would reflect light and disturb animals, but also disturb astronomers who were trying to see beyond that and can kind of confuse them and everything. But I didn't really hear much controversy after that, and it was only up for about 3 months, and I never saw it. But it made me think, you know, as a graffiti artist, I'd like to have a big piece floating in space, you know, maybe paint the space shuttle or something, go on a spacewalk and tag up the space station. Somebody's going to do it, man. Somebody's going to be the first.
Be the first, Damien.
I just need that $250,000 Virgin Galactic ticket. Because you know that, Virgin Airways, well, there's Virgin Galactic, and they're going to have low Earth orbit space travel. And the tickets cost $250,000.
All right, listeners, send all your money to Think Theory Radio at WCPT, and Damien will do a live remote from outer space.
Oh, man, that is an amazing idea. Come on, let's get it done. GoFundMe, Indiegogo, where we got to go. can my bosses give me, you know, that big of a raise to, you know, do that?
No. You can get the advertising. It'd be huge. The first ever radio show from space.
And I'll do, you know, I'll do a WCPT 820 graffiti burner up there, you know, wild style it out and be like one huge billboard, but graffiti style.
Next all staff meeting, we're pitching this.
All right. I like it. Let's do it. I mean, you can't get a bigger promotional event than that, right?
No. Look at NSYNC. They're going to be the first boy band in outer space and people still talk about it. It never even happened.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, you just reminded me of there's going to be a DJ in space.
Really?
Yeah. And let's see, where is it at? This was, I'm finding a different one, but there was one that's supposed to be happening pretty soon. I'm finding some Luca Parmitano becomes the first person to ever DJ from outer space, but that's not... Although that is interesting, but I think he was just an astronaut who DJed. But they're actually talking about bringing a DJ into space. I'm going to find that when we go to the next break, and I'll get back to that. But yeah, they're going to send this house DJ up into space to do a set from the International Space Station, I believe. And then, space beats.
Now, are they streaming the event? Are there going to be people in the shuttle watching the show? Or how? Or is he just doing this for fun?
It's VIP only, man. You can't get through those space station bouncers.
No.
You got to have that money. No, I think they're going to live stream it and everything. But this sounds interesting, so I got to find that during the break. But let's get back to some other crazy stories, and I want to keep on this technology kind of segment we're doing here. So we're going to get into these robotic lenses, and this is from imaginethat.org. Says these robotic lenses will integrate seamlessly with your own eyes. Blink twice and you can zoom in for a close-up view of something tiny. Blink three times and you can zoom out to take a wide-angle view. The stuff cyborgs are made of? Nope. The stuff our contact lenses could eventually be made of, perhaps. And that stuff will be made from soft polymers, like the acrylic foam used for a lens made by Shengquang Kai and his team at the University of California, San Diego, made possible by petrochemicals like propylene. What those polymers make possible in this case is a flexible lens that can be controlled by the movement of our eyes. Our eyes already change the shape of our natural-born eyes and how we adjust to changes in light or distance. Now those same tiny electrical impulses generated by the tiny muscles in our eyes may be what changes the shape of our new cyborg eyes. This is actually part of a larger field of research around creating machines made from soft materials that attempt to replicate organic materials like the human eye. In the world of soft robots, or if you like the more technical term, the human soft machine interface, robots that can squeeze into tight spaces like damaged buildings for search and rescue, or inside the human body for delicate surgeries. But while our squishy overlords are farther off in the future, maybe in the not-too-distant future, blink and you'll miss it will be replaced by blink and you'll see everything. So it kind of reminds me of like Google Glass, but contact lens version. Sounds cool to me. Sign me up. I got bad vision anyway, so wouldn't mind some robotic lenses. Although it'd be kind of freaky, though, because you would never know. Or I don't know if you can see him or not, you know? Like, if you don't know if somebody's, like, looking at you and they're, like, zooming in, looking at your acne and stuff. Trying to read your mind. But, yeah, Google Glass. It reminds me of Google Glass, and that was kind of fell out of the mainstream.
I was going to say, did those ever come out? Did you get tested or anything?
They did get tested. There was a bunch of beta tests. You can actually go on YouTube and find videos that they shot from the beta testers. And it looks pretty cool. It's all voice activated. So you'll see a bunch of people, you know, riding roller coasters, while, you know, taking pictures of their kids, ordering food, whatever it is. And you basically, it's similar to a smartphone. It's just on your face.
Right.
But I guess there was... I think part of the problem was that they were getting a lot of pushback, you know, basically like kind of the public-private debate. So I remember reading articles about some of the people with the test glasses going into like Starbucks and the cashiers refusing to serve them because they're like, they didn't want to be filmed or taken pictures of without their knowledge and stuff like that. But I read up on it to see, because I was curious, like, well, whatever happened to them? And, of course, the military snatched it up. So now they're pretty much being used in military equipment and giving them to soldiers so they can, you know, shoot more accurately or something. But they say they're still trying to get it out to the public. I think also part of it is that it was the same glasses. And no one wants to walk around like everyone wearing the same glasses.
Right.
You know, so I think until they figure out how they can put them in any kind of frames, you know, because people like to style. So we'll see. We'll see if we ever get that. I'm pretty sure it will happen. I feel like that's the eventual inevitability of where we're going. You know, smartphones, they're already in everybody's face anyway. It'd be a lot easier if you just had it here so you're not like looking down at the ground all the time.
Save your neck all that pain from looking down for
exactly.
Years.
They say like the younger kids are going to grow up all hunchbacked. They've been like hunching over, looking at their phones their whole lives.
I already have neck pain. I'm not even a younger kid. Just some days I'm like, ooh, I'm like, ah, I'm looking at my phone too much or looking down at something too much.
Yeah, pinched nerves and all that. Not good, my man. Not good. But we're going to take a quick break here. If you want to give us a call, if you have any questions or if you have some weird science stories to share, give us a call at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. We'll be back with more Think Theory Radio right after this.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're doing weird science. And I've been having some fun with it. And in the last segment, we talked about the DJ going to space, right? So I found the article on that one. And it's DJ Jeff Mills And Jeff Mills is going to be the first DJ to play in space. And it's SpaceX designer and Tesla co-founder Elon Musk who's making it happen. Of course, it's got to be Elon, you know. Musk, who sent a Tesla Roadster into space last February, reportedly caught wind of Jeff Mills' recent hookup with NASA and decided he was the right selector to be sent out into space. And no, we're not talking about the reopening of Space Ibiza. I don't even know what that is, but I'm going to have to look it up. The Detroit musician really is taking a trip to the stars in his latest musical venture. He'll be playing across three turntables, a throwback to his earliest performances. A DJ playing in space is so obviously the future, the wizard told Mix Mag. So I wanted to balance that with analog technology in its purest form, three perfectly calibrated Technique 1210s. The set will take place in September of this year and will be streamed live to a global audience. Mills will spend the best part of this year working on his track selection, which will span the entirety of his career so far. Jeff wanted to bring a full orchestra with him at first, a source close to the project told us, but his favorite bassoon would burst under the pressure of zero gravity. Huh. So he decided to go vinyl only. Elon Musk, of course, sent his Tesla Roadster car into space in the Falcon Heavy rocket earlier last year, and Mills will go up in the specially made Falcon Heavy MK2, which is ready and waiting to take off from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The crowds who gather to watch such seminal launches from the center are also in for extra special experience. The performance will be aired from a weighty Function 1 rig situated close to the takeoff zone, while custom Jeff Mills and NASA bomber jackets will be available from a pop-up shop, of course. Gotta have swag there, you know, to make some money. At a press conference earlier, Elon Musk said, I know there's a DJ called Intergalactic Gary who would also be suitable. But an early adopter friend of mine put me onto the NASA-associated NTS radio shows Jeff has been hosting, and I knew he'd be perfect for the job. Having then gone through his back catalog and discovered he has an album called One Man Spaceship, there really was no doubt in my mind that I had picked the right selector, Musk said. Mills will play for approximately 12 hours in space before returning to Earth, where 18 months will have passed in real time. Wait, what? 12 hours in space and 18 months will have passed. Interesting. Got to do the math on that one. I'll be gone for a while, and it's meant canceling all of my upcoming festival sets. But I feel like this is as close to a homecoming gig as I'll ever get, he said. I've got a few surprises up my sleeve, but I can tell you now my remix of Jamiroquai's Space Cowboy will be getting its first play. So I think that happened. It must have happened in September, it said, so I have to look up and see the footage of that, or listen to the mix, at least. Very interesting. And earlier, I teased the story of the fifth force of nature might have been found. Dun, 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 dun. And this is from CNN.com. And it says, Hungarian scientists may have found a fifth force of nature. Physics centers essentially on four forces that control our known visible universe, governing everything from the production of heat in the sun to the way your laptop works. They are gravity, electromagnetism, the weak nuclear force, and the strong force. New research may be leading us closer to one more. Scientists at the Institute for Nuclear Research at the Hungarian Academy of Sciences have posted findings showing what could be an example of that fifth force at work. The scientists were closely watching how an excited helium atom emitted light as it decayed. The particles split at an unusual angle, 115 degrees, which couldn't be explained by known physics. The study's lead scientist, Attila Krishnahorkay, told CNN that this was the second time his team had detected a new particle, which they called X17, because they calculated its mass at 17 megaelectron volts. X17 could be a particle which connects our visible world with the dark matter. For those of you who don't know, 96% of our universe is dark matter and dark energy, they think. Jonathan Fang, a professor of physics and astronomy at the University of California at Irvine, told CNN he's been following the Hungarian team's work for years and believes its research is shaping up to be a game changer. If these results can be replicated, this would be a no-brainer Nobel Prize, he said. 3 years ago, the Hungarian researchers published a similar paper in Physical Review Letters, one of the most prestigious journals in physics. The nuclear physics experimental team had been studying another isotope, beryllium-8. As it decays down to a ground state, they saw electrons and positrons splitting off from the atom at unusual angles. Those findings, which showed particles coming off beryllium-8 at around 140-degree angle, were strange and new. We introduced such a new particle which nobody saw before and whose existence could not be understood by the widely accepted standard model of particle physics, so it faced scrutiny, Karisna Horke said in an email. The finding by his team didn't get much attention at first, but they raised Fang's eyebrows. He said he didn't want to leave potentially revolutionary results just sitting on the table. In short, it could change physics as we know it, or it could have just been a simple lab error. Some people say they screwed up, Fang said, but he believed the Hungarians were for real. His research group published a paper on the heels of the Hungarians' 2016 work, laying out a theory to observe what Karisna Horke's experimental team had seen. They referred to this unseen fifth force in action as a protophobic force, meaning it was as though the particles were afraid of protons. Meanwhile, nuclear physicists around the world set to work looking for errors in the Hungarians' work and have come up empty-handed over the past few years. Some very well-known nuclear physicists have done that exercise, Fink said. The numbers seem to add up, and no one could find ways their equipment was calibrated incorrectly. And Fang said that his own team was comparing the Hungarian experiments with every other experiment that has been done in the history of physics. The only way to explain X-17 was a hitherto undetected fifth force. The findings point toward the holy grail of physics. To move their breakthrough idea from 2016 forward, the Hungarians would need to repeat the results again. That's exactly what their 2019 results do. Fang says that barring experimental error, there was only a 1 in trillion chance that the results were caused by anything other than the X-17 particle and this new fifth force. He added that if another research group could repeat these results with a third type of atom in addition to beryllium and helium, that would blow the cover off this thing. Experimental research groups have already been contacting him, hungry to do just that. More sightings of the fifth force could lead scientists settling on a specific name for it, understanding its workings more deeply, and developing practical applications for how to harness its power. They're leading us closer to what's considered the holy grail of physics, which Albert Einstein had pursued but never achieved. Physicists hope to create a unified field theory which would coherently explain all cosmic forces from the formation of galaxies down to the quarks, to the quarks of quarks. But the universe isn't giving up its secrets easily. There's no reason to stop at the fifth, Fang said. There could be a sixth, seventh, and eighth force. There we go. So, physics as we know could be upended. And that's the second article I read that goes against the old standard model of particle physics. And to keep on this cool particle physics kind of a motif I got going on here, I go to this next one. A jewel at the heart of quantum physics. And this is reading from quantummagazine.org. Physicists have discovered a jewel-shaped geometric object that challenges the notion that space and time are fundamental constituents of nature. This is completely new and very much simpler than anything that has been done before, said Andrew Hodges, a mathematical physicist at Oxford University who has been following the work. The revelation that particle interactions, the most basic events in nature, may be consequences of geometry significantly advances a decades-long effort to reformulate quantum field theory, the body of laws describing elementary particles and their interactions. Interactions that were previously calculated with mathematical formulas thousands of terms long can now be described by computing the volume of the corresponding jewel-like amplituhedron, which yields an equivalent one-term expression. The degree of efficiency is mind-boggling, said Jacob Bergeli, a theoretical physicist at Harvard University and one of the researchers who developed the new idea. You can easily do, on paper, computations that were infeasible even with a computer before. The new geometric version of quantum field theory could also facilitate the search for a theory of quantum gravity that would seamlessly connect the large and small-scale pictures of the universe. Attempts thus far to incorporate gravity into the laws of physics at the quantum scale have run up against nonsensical infinities and deep paradoxes. The amplituhedron, or a similar geometric object, could help by removing two deeply rooted principles of physics, locality and unitarity. Both are hardwired in the usual way we think about things, said Nima Arkani Hamed, a professor of physics at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, and lead author of the new work, which he is presenting in talks and in the forthcoming paper. Both are suspect. So locality is the notion that particles can interact only from adjoining positions in space and time. And unitarity holds the probabilities of all possible outcomes of a quantum mechanical interaction must add up to one. The concepts are the central pillars of quantum field theory in its original form. But in certain situations involving gravity, both break down, suggesting neither is a fundamental aspect of nature. In keeping with this idea, the new geometric approach to particle interactions removes locality and unitarity from its starting assumptions. The amplituhedron is not built out of space-time and probabilities. These properties merely arise as a consequence of the Joule's geometry. The usual picture of space and time and particles moving around in them as is a construct. It's a better formulation that makes you think about everything in a completely different way, said David Skinner, a theoretical physicist at Cambridge University. The amplituhedron looks like an intricate, multifaceted jewel in higher dimensions. Encoded in its volume are the most basic features of reality that can be calculated, scattering amplitudes, which represent the likelihood that a certain set of particles will turn into certain other particles upon colliding. So this goes into actually what I was talking about a couple weeks ago about math and geometry, and this kind of gets into if you study any kind of, if you've looked up or heard anything about sacred geometry, which is like kind of this ancient mystical belief that everything breaks down to a geometrical form, it's pretty interesting that these physicists are actually finding evidence that this exists, that there actually is this kind of jewel-shaped pattern that forms the structure, you know, that the basis of it forms the underlying form of the universe instead of more chaotic random interactions. This is more of a mathematical construct, more uniformity basically in the universe. And it's interesting, you know. I wish I had more time to get into how that relates to sacred geometry. Maybe I'll have to do another show on that, because this is really close to what a lot of the ancient mystics believe. So it's pretty interesting. And if you want to check that out, go to quantummagazine.org. But as always, we're running out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening to another Think Theory Radio. We'll be back again next week right here on WCPT 820 and every Saturday from 6 to 7 p.m. May the fifth force be with you.